And welcome back to the Corridor of Uncertainty podcast, the podcast where we delve into the modeling and the kind of nerdy bits of FPL. And this is now episode 5, and I'm joined not only by my co-host Jamie, but we also have a guest this time, and it's the famous FPL Salah, also known as Abdul. So Abdul, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Simon. Jamie, how are you guys?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Jamie. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm sort of a wee bit rattled at the moment, but I'm sure get a bit of time off at Christmas and I'm sure I'll be my usual chirpy self before too much longer.
Yeah, halfway through the podcast.
Yeah, a couple of beers in. But I was going to warn you guys, I might be a bit punchy tonight, but we'll see how it goes. I can behave.
No more than usual. Today we're going to dig into Abdul's process a little bit. He's, I think, you're 40th in the Hall of Fame, so we've got one of the great FPL minds on here. We aren't going to rehash, and if you haven't listened to, you should already. He was on FPL Wire. We're not going to rehash the stuff that was on there. We're going to try and kind of dig it a little bit like sideways, and then we're also going to talk about some of the mental health aspects of FPL. We couldn't do a podcast and not talk about the doubles and chip strategy. And I think we might talk a little bit about squad structure coming off the back of that. Yeah, welcome, Abdul. Jamie, I think you had a few questions you wanted to ask Abdul.
It's going to be an interrogation, I think, of sorts. So, right, if you're ready. So, Abdul, we just thought it'd be good to, if you want to introduce yourself, for everyone knows who you are, but maybe people don't, or maybe it'd be interesting to hear how you would describe yourself. So, yeah, if you want to introduce yourself and give you a quick, like, potted history, how you got into FPL and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if everybody knows who I am, but, maybe just a few in the FPL community. But, yeah, so I've been playing FPL for around about since 2007-8, so quite a while, 13 years now. So yeah, I've had pretty good history. I had 4 top 1Ks and, like, you know, a few top 20s. And yeah, over the years, I've just got more and more addicted to it, and started to get into a bit of content creation as well, writing articles, etc., which is good. It means, like, you know, it's not all just in vain. Kind of made something out of it a little bit. Of course, I've, like, FPL's obviously still a hobby and still a kind of part-time thing. And, you know, I've got a full-time job, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And then, somehow find time for full-time FPL as well.
Yeah, you write a lot. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you put out there. And I think you had contributed to, like, a sort of guide, have you not? About, like, you know, like your kind of, like, tips and stuff like that for how to play FPL?
Yeah. So that was pre-season. Yeah, so, like, I wasn't expecting it to be so long, but it just kind of one of those things where it just started it and it just kind of, escalated. But it was quite a long one. That was pretty hectic. I don't usually obviously write that much. I mean, for Fantasy Football Hub, I'm doing about 3 articles a week just now, you know, which I get time for. I mean, it's helped a lot, actually, working from home. So it gives me a bit more time to kind of do that side of things, the FPL side of things as well.
Yeah. Presuming your boss doesn't listen to this podcast.
Just in case he is, do it after working hours.
Yes, I think we all do all of our FPL stuff after working hours. It strikes me that you must have quite a kind of clear head. And how much time do you spend thinking about your team and the stuff you're going to do? Does the writing help you, like, with your distill your thoughts and stuff like that? Or is that just an extra overhead? Because I don't know what it's like for you, Simon, but I've got loads of ideas for things that I want to work on. And the list that I've got at the start of this year is really similar to the list I had at the start of last year. I don't get through too much stuff between going down rabbit holes and trying to actually play FPL. I don't really feel like I managed to invest that much time in things like that, like writing or like improving a model or whatnot. So is that fair to say that you, like, you're able to, like, partition things quite well? Or, like, maybe are you, like, a really organized person?
I'm definitely not an organized person, but since I've kind of started doing writing and stuff, and I do spend a lot less time on my actual team, but I've also realized over the years that I don't actually need to spend as much time on it, you know, than I used to. I mean, back in the early years, I was making early transfers and, you know, building team value, things like that. But over the years, I've like kind of realized it's a lot more optimal waiting until the end of the week when you've got all the information. But yeah, so now, like, what I'll do after the game week, I'll just have a wee look at my team and see, have a little idea of what transfers I might want to make, and then just kind of switch off. And then when I'm doing, like, all the writing for Fantasy Football Hub, I mean, it's, you're taking things in subconsciously anyway, so you're kind of doing the research there anyway. But you know, you're seeing little bits and bobs, you're seeing, you know, certain stats, etc. So yeah, so it's kind of all intertwined, if you know what I mean. I definitely don't think you need to be, you know, spending like an hour a day on your team. I think when you do that, you tend to overthink. That's what I found. And like most weeks, like most moves are fairly obvious, and you know, they're fairly simple. And it's just about kind of, you know, keeping a cool head, not making those like knee-jerk transfers, another player hauls, and you want to bring them in for the price rises, etc. So yeah, I think that's probably one of my strengths, actually, is just to kind of, you know, hold back and actually kind of think back midweek with a cool head, you know, when, you know, when things haven't kind of gone my way. I won't rush into things.
How do you find yourself keeping that clear head? So I think we've touched on it on this pod before, and that I could not play FPL without having my own model. I just would be all over the place. And as far as I know, you kind of don't maintain your own model. The moves are obvious to me because I've got the numbers in front of them, but the moves would not be close to obvious to me without having that resource. So like, what about it like gives you the insight as to like how to keep the clear head and like make the obvious moves?
Well, over the years, I've always been like a stats person, like looking at numbers, and I'll always look at the stats. And if my players are performing, I'll keep them. And, you know, the metrics I look at quite primarily is, you know, expected goals and expected assists. But over the past few years, what's really helped me in my decision making and kind of helped me take a step back in Russian transfers, etc., is actually looking at models. I mean, you're right, I don't actually make my own model. Not as talented as you guys. I actually admire the guys that do it because it's a lot of work that goes into it. I look at Mikel's, you know Mikel Tokvam, his transfer algorithm. So I'm a subscriber to his Patreon, and also you guys know about FPL Review, his website fplreview.com. You know, it's one of the best fantasy and stats websites out there. They're the kind of resources I look at when I'm looking at my transfers. So with obviously, you know, Mikel's tables, you look at them and it gives you a good idea of whether a transfer is worth it or not. It's not something I use primarily to make my transfer decisions, but it gives me a really good idea of whether I'm going down the right path. And then when I'm on Twitter, like honestly, I've got a list of like accounts, like for example, you two are in it, and you've got, you know, some other guys like FPL Chase, FPL Rooster, you know, like the modeling guys and the stats guys, who are a lot more, you know, a lot better at, you know, interpreting data than me. I think that's probably one of my weaknesses, which I'm trying to kind of build on as well, is actually interpreting the data, you know, as well as you guys. And it's something that I look at. So I'll look at what you guys are saying, and, you know, if so, and a lot of the time I've found it agrees, you know, you guys are kind of thinking on along the same lines as me, which is comforting for me. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not an expert in actually interpretation of data, and it's something I think I need to improve on, but I think it's something that's definitely getting better over the years. And I think my game's improved since I've been doing that.
Ah, okay. There's loads of really good stuff there, because I'm not going to lie, like my impression of you is that you're someone who is able to exercise judgment really well in the sort of stuff that you use. Well, I'm inferring that you must be, because you're really successful and you have repeatable success, but you also reference stats and use stats in, like, as far as I can tell, in quite a measured and smart way, you know, relatively speaking, you know, compared to some other accounts that are out there and stuff like that. I think you seem good at that to me. So it's interesting that you think it's a weakness.
I think, like, you know, since the kind of boom of Twitter, since the quality of accounts have really improved as well, and it's so easy to, you know, to get quality information now. I mean, just for example, like, you know, some of the tables that you guys do and the models that you guys do, and, you know, all the other models that are out there, it really, really kind of reduces the workload for guys like me.
Okay.
You know, so it's really handy. So yeah, it's one of the huge advantages of Twitter. I mean, there's a lot of disadvantages to Twitter as well, because there's a lot of noise, but I think blocking out that noise is something that I've done well as well, and just kind of concentrated, you know, my kind of research, as you could say, into, like, you know, a really kind of a niche market, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you sort of select the sources that you use. I mean, I do that as well. I've got a list that I kind of use on Twitter, which is quite small, of people that, if I really, you know, sometimes when it gets too noisy out on my timeline, then I'll go in there and just kind of see what, you know, some of the people that I particularly care about are saying. Do you watch a lot of games, Abdul?
This season, I've watched a lot of games because of just the way it's, because obviously all the games are live.
Spread out,
Yeah, they're spread out. Usually, I'd probably watch maybe one or two live games at the weekend.
Yeah.
Don't get the time for it just with the kids and that, but I'm definitely watching match of the day and watching the highlights, but I don't actually think watching every single live game, I don't know, I mean, for me, stats over real eye test, I think eye test can be quite objective in terms of, like, if the three of us are watching a football match, we might have different takes on what we've seen and, you know, what the conclusions that we come to. So I really find that looking at stats kind of gives you a more of a fact-based outcome. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, watching more live games this season, I mean, I've had a really good start, but I don't think that's due to watching more live games.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, I mean, I think I'm in a sort of minority where if I watch, I don't watch hardly any games, but I wouldn't really trust myself to be able to, like, use the information that I got from watching a game very well. You know, like, if someone scored, I'd probably think, oh, he looks good.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Because that's just a way that, like, I would be prone to that bias. And by using the numbers, I'm kind of immunizing myself against that bias. And I think it goes the other way, where some people who maybe aren't as au fait with using stats, they might tend to kind of, like, misuse a stat or not know which stat to look for. But maybe when they watch a game, they can get a better feel for it. And that's, you know, that's fine. I've got all the time for that kind of thing. But no, it's interesting to see. So you're kind of using a balance, but you're trying to refine, like, what sources you're listening to.
There's definitely something interesting in the fact that your eye test gets refined by knowing about the stats. So I find that I watch football in a very different way to how I used it before I came across Football Analytics. So I probably used to have the same thing that you had, Jamie, like, oh yeah, he scored, he looks good. Whereas having an understanding of what's repeatable and, like, what makes a good chance and so on, like, makes me watch football in a different way. I think the eye test is a really interesting one. I agree, stats generally overrule the eye test. I kind of wish I watched more football because it would let me know when something's, like, changed, and therefore I should be looking for a change in the data before the data will pick it up, just because of sample size reasons. So I think you can potentially pick up on, like, I don't know, let's say, like, when Werner's playing on the left versus playing as a striker, like, how does the balance of the Chelsea team change? And in order to get, like, a statistically significant sample, you're going to need to get 10 games, by which time, like, half the season's gone. Have you found, like, that happening, Abdul, as you've watched more games this season, or is it just something that hasn't really factored into your decision making at all? Like, how have you played differently?
Yeah, I don't think it has. I mean, I definitely agree with you, and I'm in the same boat as it's definitely you know, kind of changed my view a bit of how you watch football, because you look at, you know, which players are getting in the box. And I mean, I think that's one thing, one advantage of an eye test would be, was, like, you know, if you're seeing a player's getting in dangerous positions and, you know, he's, you know, 1 inch away from getting onto a cross and things like that, and then the stats won't show that, it'll show himself in zero shots on target, you know, zero shots in the box, things like that. So that's the things I do look out for when I'm, you know, watching games. But I think generally, I mean, I'm just kind of plucking a number out of the air here, but I think 90% of what you see, you know, with the eye test, you can see in the numbers and the stats.
Interesting. Okay, so you mentioned the TalkVan model and FPL review, and also you kind of started talking about your process where, like, at the start of the week, you might have an idea for what you're going to do, and then maybe you'll step back as the week goes on, wait for all the information and kind of let it settle, and then, you know, think seriously about your move towards the end of the week. So what kind of process are you going through, like, when you're identifying someone in your team that you think maybe you don't want anymore, like, they've become a problem, or someone who you think you need to get in? Because for Simon and I, like we say, they tend to just show up in our numbers. Like, they tend to be like, okay, the numbers are there, the fixtures are there, so the projected points are all there. But I know that, like, the way that some people might play the game is, for example, someone has scored 3 weeks in a row, and when you look at their form rating on the FPL site, they've got a high score, you know, and, like, that's how they're identifying targets by this, not like, because those guys are making a lot of noise. So do you have, like, a process? Is it very, I don't imagine it's too scripted, but do you have a process that you follow for identifying, okay, what are the priorities and things like that? Or is it just something that kind of well, you go on, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think my primary aim every week is to get rid of the weak links. So, okay. I mean, most of the time, you know, your proven assets, like, you know, Salah, Son, Bruno, they're staying where they are, even if they've gone through, like, a series of blanks. I mean, I'm not big on getting rid of premiums unless, you know, there's something like an obvious change, like, you know, okay, like a change in position, and you realize, you know, there's another premium asset who's, you know, performing and he's got better fixtures. But usually I just go for the weakest link. And with FPL, I mean, every week, you know, there's something cropping up, you know, there's players injured. I mean, usually that's what I look at, and I look at trying to alleviate in that. This season, I think I've got off to a good start. So, I mean, I've been fairly lucky in that. So I've not had to actually use many transfers. I think I've only used, like, I've only done like 15 transfers this season. And like in the first few weeks, I'd only used about three in like, I think, the first five or six. So basically, you know, there were things like at the start of the season, people were getting rid of Son for Rashford, and, you know, a big reason for the good start to my season was keeping Son, you know, keeping like that proven asset, and, you know, focusing on the weaker points rather than, you know, looking to kind of capitalize on shifting premiums. So yeah, I'd say that would be my main focus, trying to look at the weak spot.
Brilliant. This season, it seems like it's a really good, like, there's more good reason from a strategic point of view not to sell premium guys when they're still fit and still being selected, because mm-hmm. there's all this uncertainty and stuff like that, and people getting injured more than normal, games getting called off even, and things like that we've been seeing. So are you saying that this priority that you have to tend to sort out the weak links is like a natural aspect of your play? Because I think it probably tends to be very well suited to this year. Or is that something that you've like consciously tried to kind of turn up the volume on this year because of the way the season's been going?
No, I think this is primarily the way I play anyway. But yeah, I think this season has definitely helped. And I think it's helped in the fact that there's been so many premiums firing. So, you know, if you've not got a Bruno, you've got a KDB, or if you've not got a Son, you've got a Grealish. So
yeah.
I think the points have been quite spread out. I know a lot of people have got off to like a really, you know, rough start this season. But I think I've kind of been on the right side of that variance, where even though I've not had certain players who have been performing, my other players have been banging in, because I bought in Kane in game week 7. I didn't bring in Calvert-Lewin until game week 8. So, right, you know, these are players that are kind of banging from the start. But instead of DCL, I had Ings, you know, who was scoring, you know, until he got injured. And then instead of Kane, I had Werner, who was kind of keeping up with him until I got rid. So I think I've just kind of been on the right side of the variance this season, actually.
I think you've made me realise why my season hasn't been so strong. I haven't owned any of Kane, Calvert-Lewin or Bruno Fernandes all season. And instead of Calvert-Lewin, I've had Chris Wood banging in the two-pointers.
I think you're extra patient. I think you're
too patient.
Foolish, you say. Yeah.
He scored this weekend, though, didn't he? You got a bit of a bit of a return from him.
Good point.
Paid back his hit in game week 3. I wanted to kind of dig into, like, how do you think about what makes FPL like a bit more of a complex game? So I think it's relatively straightforward, at least for the type of people who are listening to this podcast, to determine like who's a good FPL asset. I mean, I imagine most of our listeners are pretty au fait with like, okay, use expected goals on both the player and the team level to work out like what a baseline is and what a good fixture is. But then there's the fact that you get one transfer per week,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that the prices change, I think, makes the game strategically unclear. So like, how do you factor those things into your decision making? Do you think it's just a style thing? Do you think there is an optimal way to play? Like, how do you think about those kind of aspects of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there is one like optimal right way to play the game, but because you see people, I mean, you see managers who make early transfers and build team value, do well, and you see the opposite as well. Yeah, I think where the kind of game gets a bit, I think, complicated, and where people might not be too privy to, is things like the value of players. Like, you know, if you've got, for example, you know, an Ollie Watkins or a Bamford, and, you know, if they're getting like 5 points a week, 6 points a week, that's, you know, that's good value. But people might expect Watkins and Bamford to, you know, be scoring braces every week just because, you know, they've had a good start. But I think that aspect of the game is underestimated. I think the value of transfers is underestimated as well, because I'm really, really against hits. I think people take hits, you know, without even thinking about it, and, you know, maybe without thinking about the consequences, or, you know, calculating, you know, how much, you know, what the odds are of them actually, of that hit being successful. I mean, most of the time a hit isn't optimal, because you've got your bench players there, and then you need to calculate, you know, how much they would have got against your hit as well. So yeah, I think that's where it kind of, for me, where it gets a bit murky in terms of that complication of the game. But yeah, I think apart from that, as you say, it's fairly simple.
So do you factor those things in when you're making your decision, like the idea that a player is like falling in value and then that's going to have some kind of like knock-on impact on your expected like future returns, or do you just kind of forget about it? And
no, I mean, like at the moment, for example, this for the past few seasons, I've kind of ignored team value to quite a large extent. So, like if I've got a like for example, I had Mitrovic for the first 8 game weeks, and he was falling in value, but I still felt he was still decent value. He was still scoring and getting points. And I know he went through a little bad patch where he missed the penalty and that, but no, I mean. If I think a player is still worth his value, I wouldn't really take him out just because he's falling in price. There's very I will make early transfers, and I have made early transfers this season. And if I'm being priced out of a move, which I know that I'm really really likely to make, or like I'm almost certain to make, and I'm going to be priced out of it, then I'll make that move. But generally, no. I mean, if I feel the player is good value, he's got a good stats, he's got good fixtures coming up, then I won't really care about how much he's fallen in price.
Really, really good point about like the value of players. I think that's something that is I've kind of detected in other people that they might not quite see in the same way as me. Like, for example, someone like a Bamford, like you say, the thing that it comes down to for me is like looking at how many points they're producing relative to their price, and like having realistic expectations about what that should be. And when I make, like, I actually make a value measure in the model that I would make, which says, how many points more than the average expectation for a player in that position at that price is this person producing? And that's kind of like the way I might sort players to say who's producing the most above their price. So like I'm kind of doing in a technical way, like exactly that kind of sum that you describe. Are you kind of doing that in a sort of more of a judgment type way? Are you sitting there with like a little planner which has got everyone's points for the next 8 weeks, and this guy gets you 0.2 extra this week, and if you take a hit then it works out at plus 1.6, and or are you just kind of like mainly going more on the judgment of it and the direction of the numbers and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, I wouldn't say kind of calculating their expected points over. I don't think I've got the acumen to do that really. I think that's more like what probably you guys do in terms of like the guys who make the models. But yeah, I think I'm more instinctive when it comes to that. I'll kind of use my judgment there. I kind of look at just for example, I'll look at Mitrovic for the first 4 weeks, and I'm thinking, okay, he's got this amount of points. He's only like 6 million. He's doing okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm expecting him to get maybe say 10 goals a season. He's performing as expected. So yeah, for I'll use my judgment for that. Again, I think it's probably something. I mean, what you suggested there, and it's probably what you guys do is look at your models and look at the expected points. It's probably something I should do more to get a more factual. A more factual kind of outcome. I use my judgment for that.
That's really interesting, because I think I can overdo it on that stuff. I've done that before where I've looked at a planner and I've seen, like, when Wan-Bissaka was really cheap, I took him out on a wild card because I only needed him on a few rotations and I could see that someone else was better. Even though I bought him at 4 million, I think a player that played on judgment and stuff would have just rejected that idea out of hand. But I kind of probably got a bit too clever with it. I suspected that was kind of how you might be playing it. And obviously you've got the review model, you've got TalkVam, and you can kind of see it, but it sounds like it's kind of accumulated expertise, just like judgment about what are the most important things to be looking at. Because you only really have a couple of decisions to make every week, which is transfer, captain, who's first on your bench. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot that we really have to do ultimately.
I think I think when you're looking at all these sources, it's subconscious as well. It's subconscious, like you're building information in your brain which you might not know that's there, but it's kind of factors into your decision making. I think there's that aspect as well. When you're looking at models and you're looking at expected points, etc., I think there's definitely that factor there as well. So I think that's probably what my judgment is based on, actually. It's based on like looking at all these models and on websites and expected stats. So
I think it sounds to me like you know, you said one of your strengths was that you've got this ability to be patient, you know, and hold off on moves. And I think it sounds like you're someone who's really good at knowing how to balance and weigh information with your kind of with your experience and stuff. But you are someone who, I think Simon mentioned, you're in the top sort of 40 or something like that in the Hall of Fame on Fantasy Football Scout. Is that right?
Yeah. The live Hall of Fame, yeah.
Yeah.
And last time I checked, it was 40th, yeah.
I was talking to FPL Research before this, and he maintains a really good manager skill rating model. And I think he's got a couple of different measures, but he's got you in the top 20. Really, really right up at the very top. So you're probably, I think, quite a modest person, but are there things that you think you know from looking at your own process and understanding yourself well, and also looking at other managers, that you would say that you do well that maybe we haven't talked about yet?
That's a good question. I don't know. As you said, a lot of it is subconscious. So, I mean, maybe, you know, sometimes I'll do things without realizing it. But like when I kind of look at my own game and think, you know, what my strengths are, that's the conclusions I come to, is like, you know, being patient, you know, looking at the stats, looking at the facts, and, you know, not getting kind of, you know, pulled in by all the noise, and really speaking to kind of like-minded managers as well. Because one thing I won't do is, or I'll try really hard not to do, is kind of ask questions about my team on Twitter, for example, because, you know, you'll get about 20 different answers, and you know, it just really affects your decision making. It's actually has a detrimental effect, I think. Yeah, I think having like a small pool of, like, you know, managers that I talk to about my team as well really helps. For me, another thing as well is making the simple moves. And I think another thing which I never really kind of deter from is picking, you know, the obvious captains. I'll very, very seldom go for a, you know, like a differential punt on my captains, or, you know, make maverick moves. I mean, I did earlier on in, like, kind of my fantasy football career, but I've really, you know, kind of gone away from that now. It's a good question, and I don't know if I've answered it, but
you've certainly done enough, and you know, maybe if you think of anything else, then let us know. But it's really interesting to get to pick your brain on it. Something you mentioned was like having a small pool of people that you might consult with it. I was really interested in asking you about this, what I regard to be like a sort of infamous Facebook group that's, you know, I'm an outsider, so from my point of view, there's this group that I found out about that seems to have spawned many illustrious fantasy football careers. So I imagine it as being, you know, some kind of
training center
where all the secret, the real goods are exchanged on how you're supposed to be really good at fantasy football. So do you want to talk a little bit about the you know, as much as you're allowed to, about the, is it called the Transfer Planner Facebook group?
No, it's the Transfer Hub. I mean, yeah, it's no big secret. I mean, if any of you guys want to join it, or, you know, any listeners want to join, they can. But yeah, it's not, I mean, when you mentioned like the infamous Transfer Hub group, I was a bit surprised. But yeah, it was just a group that was initially made, I think it was about 3-4 seasons ago, by Triggerlips, you know, Nick. And yeah, there's a few really, really good managers in there. There's, you know, Sean Tobin, there's Fabio. I mean, for example, like Fabio, he's the best player, best fantasy player in the world, but he's quite a private person. He never, like, you know, talks on it, or very seldom. I mean, I hardly ever see him. I think I've only kind of actually spoken to him once or twice. But yes, it's not as you think. It's not like this big fantasy football training centre, but yeah, there is some good discussion that goes on there. It has gone a bit quiet since the kind of boom of Twitter in the last few years. But I mean, to be fair, I don't know if you guys are in any other kind of Facebook groups, but they're quite similar. I mean, there's just a few managers, you know, sometimes talk about the team, and there's a bit of discussion that goes on. You know, there's like polls. And I mean, the best thing about that group is the match day chat. There's a kind of live match day chat that happens every weekend, which everybody gets involved in. Actually, thinking about it, it was definitely like a big help to me when we first joined it, because there was a lot I learned, you know, from some of the managers there. Because Nick had his website then, you know, which he talked a lot about, you know, theory, you know, fantasy football, you know, game theory, and he talked about price points, etc., and, you know, things that I was maybe, you know, doing subconsciously, but I didn't realise I was doing them. You know, it was good to get kind of laid out, and, you know,
yeah,
he was writing articles about them. Yeah. So, yeah, it was good. I mean, I was glad that he started that group. But, yeah, it's not like a kind of Illuminati cult type thing. It's open to all.
The Area 51 of FBI.
Yeah.
Just like digging into a couple of those things, you mentioned game theory and price point. There are two concepts that I hear a lot in the community that in my game, at least, I don't pretty much take into account at all. Like, I think I've become infamous for taking big bet against highly owned players. First Jamie Vardy and then Bruno Fernandes, and it's bit me. Jamie, I think you've mentioned that you're kind of factoring that into your play a little bit more. And Abdul, I don't know how you think about those kind of two concepts in FBR.
I'm quite big on price points, especially at the start of the season. I mean, I really think there was a blog I shared at the start of the season. I don't know if you guys read it, but it was from FISO. It was a guy called Dodd who wrote like a post of how to avoid a terrible start on FPL, and it was just things like going for the nailed players, not picking risky players, you know, having your price points, like, you know, your KDB price point, you know, your Aubameyang, so you can switch between, you know, if you jumped on the wrong one, then you can get the other one with a free transfer, you know, without kind of taking hits, etc. And it's things that we all know, and they seem really obvious, but they could get overlooked sometimes. So I think that was one of the reasons for my good start as well. And yeah, I'm quite big on price points. I think, especially at the start of the season, it gives you a good chance not only to kind of get off to a good start, but, you know, avoid a bad one. And I mean, the start of the season is when you have the least information, so it's the toughest time to, you know, display your statistical prowess, if you know what I mean. It's quite potluck. So having that flexibility of, you know, switching between players if you've got it wrong, I think is quite important. I think a bit less so as the season goes on, as you kind of build up your team value and you know which players are banging. Like, you know, we've got all the budget price options now up front, so it gets a bit less kind of important as the season goes on. Yeah, I mean, I think doing things like going for like a five-man defence and, you know, investing a lot of money in defence is not something that I would do.
Okay, that's interesting. I would have thought that the price points almost become more important as the season goes on, because at the start of the season, you don't know what the optimal squad structure is going to look like. So that's how do you know which price points you want to be structuring the squad around? I think there's definitely something to be said in defense. If you've spread your money out in like 5.5 million defenders, it's very, very hard to change it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you've got like, I don't know, like a 10 million midfielder and a budget striker, you can reverse that or go to 2 mid price in 2 transfers rather than 1. So then the price points become a little bit less relevant as long as you're not spread too thin.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So like with the price points, like I think the kind of spread of price points I would go for was like, you know, 2 premium midfielders, you know, 1 premium striker and like 1 premium defender. So with that, you can kind of, you can switch between positions as well. Like, if you want to switch between like a midfield and a striker, then you can do it in 2 transfers. Where I think if you spread yourself too thin in the defence, or, you know, too heavy in the defence, then, you know, you might need to make, you know, 3 or 4 to get that midfielder you want. Yeah, I think the price kind of strategy I go for is actually the one that where I kind of first read on Triglup's website, was he had like, you know, the 1 premium defender, you know, the 2 premium mids, and I think that for me, it gives you good flexibility on, you know, switching between players, and if you find like, you know, there's another premium striker that you want, you can get him, you know, in 2 moves rather than having to do like surgery on your team, really. And I know that, you know, the price point thing is quite debated on Twitter. A lot of people don't agree with it, but I found it works well for me.
I think there's definitely something to be said for, especially when you have a model, like in FPL is a game where you're trying to pick outliers. Mm-hmm. You're trying to find the best value player or like the best asset. And if something's like popping as an outlier in a model, it's probably being overestimated by your model as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think the price points is like a level of like humility in realizing that there's uncertainty in the decisions that you're making, and therefore like, give yourself the outs when you realize that that's wrong, which is not something that I have a natural tendency to do. I tend to do my own model.
Yeah. To be fair, I'm quite surprised to hear that, actually, because I just assumed that you guys, I don't know if you are, Jamie, but I'd assume you guys would have been big on price points as well, because it kind of allows that flexibility. But it's quite interesting to hear that you're the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, Abdul, that I am someone who didn't learn the kind of fundamentals of FPL in a way that, like, maybe you had this education of being exposed to, like, Trigger Lips's blog and other good players. Mm-hmm. First time I was exposed to other good players was halfway through two seasons ago when I joined Twitter. I was just playing in total isolation, and I was, like, making it all up for myself, making models, and I was very ignorant to, like, the community and whatever perceived wisdom there was. Mm-hmm. So hearing this discussion is, it's kind of like when you learn something yourself, you know, independently of other people, and you always have this feeling that there might be, like, lessons you missed. That's kind of what it feels like to me. I'm going to go and look at this Trigger Lips article, because I don't really get why the price points thing would be important either. I think I said on one of the early episodes that I stick everything into the model and see where the biggest value guys are and try and get as many of those in my squad as I can. And the problem is, I think, from a kind of game theory point of view, from, like, you know how you have one transfer a week and the stickiness of your squad is sometimes you can get this kind of really unwieldy, ugly squad that you suddenly are like, realistically, you're just too many moves away from a certain combination of players for it to be very nice. And you're obviously taking kind of proactive measures to prevent that kind of situation. It's like, that's the priority, is to prevent that possibility from occurring. Does that sound right?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if you guys would agree, but the way you guys play it, I think you guys would assume that players that you are going for are the correct players, whereas I'm kind of assuming the players I'm picking, you know, could be, I could be making the wrong decision. So I want to kind of have that safety net of moving to the right player, if you know what I mean. Whereas with the modelling, because you guys make the models and, you know, you have to kind of stick by them, you have to assume that the players that you're picking are correct. I mean, if you disagree, then let me know. But you guys assume that, you know, your players are correct. And then if they're not, then it could be hard to fix that problem, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, you're totally spot on with my... Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Just, like, I'm feeling very seen right now. I think I really think that's a great insight.
Cool. So that discussion around price points kind of leads us on quite nicely to thinking about optimal squad structure. And I think it kind of demonstrates almost the different philosophies of, like, with price points, you kind of decide on what you think the optimal squad structure might be, and so that you can kind of move flexibly within that. Whereas, like, obviously the way that me and Jamie play, I think we kind of, like, let the optimal structure reveal itself. And Jamie, I think this is something you did recently, and I followed you, was the 8 attackers, which is breaking every kind of FPL good manager rule that's ever been written, and potentially getting a little bit drunk on your model. Do you want to talk us through how you got there and how it's been working out for you in the last few weeks?
So I wildcarded in game week 9, and it was highly unplanned. The way that I'd played the entire season up to that point was to make it through to game week 16 with the wild card for the chips that we knew were coming around the corner. And I'd actually played really conservatively. I had, like, quite a big bench. I was making proactive moves. I was kind of doing what Abdul was talking about earlier in the pod, where you're just trying to, I just call it solving problems or fighting fires, where you're just finding your worst piece, making it better, and then you keep on rolling. But it just so happened that, like, everything kind of came crashing down for me, quite a bit of bad luck, and then just a big, big fixture swings. So I decided to, like, on an impromptu wildcard in game week 9, and I didn't have a very good team value, and I was looking at all the players that I wanted, and there was just no way to fit everyone in that was nice when I had a cheap attacker. Like, if I got someone that I wanted, like a Suchek, or, you know, there weren't really many other options that I liked the look of, I couldn't afford the next guy up in attack, you know, without sacrificing something in defense that I really didn't want to do. So I ended up with this structure where I had 8 attackers that could play. I think I had, like, the likes of Jota in midfield, and then the likes of Watkins and Bamford up front. So you kind of, like, 6 million-ish players. And then I kind of started seeing all the positives of it, like, to do with I looked at all the rotations and they actually worked really nicely in terms of adding on additional points for me. Like when one guy had a bad fixture, the other guy comes in. And then you've got this aspect of how there's so many more injuries and whatnot this year that you think, well, okay, it's good to have a stronger bench. And so I just went with it and I thought maybe after I roll my free transfer and have two free transfers the next week, I'll change the structure. But it just never had happened. I have actually got Suchek now. I recently did get Suchek just one or two weeks ago, but for quite a long time I rolled with the structure and I quite enjoyed it, and I actually didn't make any benching errors every time. My eighth attacker always scored less than my seventh, like the guy that I would have considered benching instead of him. So it really kind of worked out, and it ended up being like something that generated a bit of like discussion on Twitter, which was quite interesting. But yeah, it felt wrong. And Abdul, I think you kind of sent a tweet which was like, lol, how are you going to choose who to bench? Yeah. It seemed to me like your impression was you wouldn't have even considered something like that because it just goes against too many principles. So yeah, that's a little potted history there of my eight attackers story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was really surprised when I seen that. Yeah, it's definitely not something I would never have really considered. I'm more of like trying to get as much money into, you know, the starting 11 and having, you know, your kind of Bissoumas and as your subs. But yeah, I mean, I spoke to you about it, and when you kind of explained your reasoning, I kind of thought, you know what, yes, it's a good point, but you're gonna have your weeks where, you know, you bench the highest scoring player. But you know, luckily for you, well, obviously not luck, but you played it well because you said that you looked at the rotation, so it worked out for you. So yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying. There's so many ways to play the game, and it's just about what works for you. And that did, you know, for the short period that you had it, it worked. So yeah, I don't think there's any criticism towards that.
Yeah, I think I remember criticizing you for it and then copying you.
Yeah, that's right. Why did you do it?
Who did I bring in? That's right. I got Ollie Watkins in for Brewster when I did it in game week 10. And there was just a lot of players in that bracket who were good value. And obviously, you could only get so many value pieces on the board along with so many premiums because you get the extreme value from one of your like budget attackers, but they also take up one of the slots where you would use the money. So you had like, I had Ollie Watkins, Bamford. I mean, somehow Chris Wood never left my team. Grealish was in mid price. You had Jota, and that only kind of left you three slot. And then the premium defenders like Trent was injured. There was kind of uncertainty around Liverpool defensive level. And so I just didn't really have a way to spend the money, which was quite funny when everyone else was like tearing their hair out trying to fit in extra premiums. And I looked at the rotations. As soon as I did it, I partly regretted it because the benching headache was just unpleasant. It didn't go particularly wrong, but just the experience of playing FPL as a hobby became less fun when I was trying to choose between two players that I thought were both good in a single week, and knowing that I was having to leave one of them out was like painful as an experience.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the reason I got off it is Jota got injured, and I thought I'd use the money to go and get Trent instead. I remember like the week where Jota and Rodriguez got injured, I could just bring in the eighth attacker and do one transfer and not worry about it. Whereas if I had been all on the starting 11, I would have been in hit central or with a really kind of a crap defender coming
or something like that. Yeah, exactly. That was quite a nice benefit of it that kind of revealed itself that I didn't really think about, which was this easing of pressure to be forced into transfers. But it sounds, Abdul, like you have you kind of played this season the same as you normally would in terms of your structure? Have you made any allowances for like the kind of extraordinary things that we've seen this season? Because I was kind of at the start of the season getting very conservative about the idea that we were going to see a lot of injuries, we were going to see a lot of illness from COVID, we're possibly going to see suspended games, and I was trying to like plan for that almost. Did you know I looked at your kind of squad and there's a lot of people that had that structure, and I kind of thought it looked a little bit too thin. You've obviously managed to kind of like get by on it. Did you make any allowances for this year, or is there anything that you like wish you'd done differently, or presumably things are going pretty well?
No, I mean, it was definitely in the back of my head, you know, regarding the season. And I did kind of plan to try and kind of bolster my defence, not my defence, but my bench. But I just didn't really kind of get into it. I was planning to get in Suchek for Bissouma, try and upgrade Mitchell, but just didn't get around to it. But yeah, I think I've got quite lucky in that aspect, whereas we've not really had... I mean, I think we had one game cancelled due to COVID, which was a Newcastle game, and I can't remember how that game went for me, actually, in terms of what game week was it? It was game week 9, wasn't it?
I think it was 11, actually.
It bit me that week because I had to play Bissouma, who got 1 point. Yeah, so that was the one week where it kind of, it did get me, but it was just the one game week. So I've kind of, yeah, as you said, I've got away with it. But no, that was definitely in my thinking. I didn't kind of purposely, you know, set my team out that way at the start of the season. I just kind of thought, you know, I'm going to just do it my usual way. And if it does seem like, you know, the situation's going to arise, if, you know, if the kind of COVID cases are going up, you know, then I will do that. But yeah, I mean, there has been players like, you know, for example, Mane and Zaha missing out. And I think I've simply been quite lucky not to have really been affected by any of that. Yeah, I think I've got my wild card, which I'm going to play in game week 16. So I think I'll probably definitely now will kind of look at that, look at the squad structure and, you know, kind of bolster my defence. I mean, bolster my bench. And I'll have to, because I'm planning on playing the bench boost in game week 19 anyway. So
yeah, cool. Well, it's a good time to talk about that stuff then, I think, because we know now what's going to be happening in game weeks 18 and 19. And we also know that there's going to be some other funny business happening in game weeks 26 and 29, by the looks of it, from some of Ben Crellin's recent tweets. And then just with this new strain of COVID, there's been a couple of like kind of official public health people who have been saying that we should expect more disruption to things like Premier League games and stuff like that. So you guys are both in the situation where you've managed to save your wild card till now. Do you want to talk about your kind of strategy? Yeah, your chip strategy, given the current blanks and stuff like that. Maybe we could give a little brief overview of what's happening in game weeks 18 and 19 for anyone who doesn't know.
For I think if you've got a wild card, it's fairly simple, I think. I mean, I'll be wild carding in game week 16, playing the free hit in game week 18, and then the blank game week 18. And then use my bench boost in double game week 19. Because there's another double game week in 26, probably use my second wild card in around about game week 20, maybe 25, and then, you know, use the triple captain in 26. Yeah, and then there's a blank game week in 29 as well, which I'll just kind of navigate with the free transfers. But yeah, from what I've looked at and from what I've seen, I think if you have your wild card, it's the imminent double game week and blank game week that's coming up, I think it's fairly simple. But I think if you haven't got your first wild card, depending on what chips you've got, I mean, there's so many ways, there's so many strategies, I think, you know, for the gaming that are coming up, for the blank and doubles that are coming up, there's a lot of ways you could play it.
Yeah, so what are you thinking about carrying this bench beyond 19? I mean, obviously you're saying you're probably going to use your second wild card in 24 or 25 by the looks of it. So that maybe that makes it easier for some people's point of view who are worrying about that. But yeah, you're going to pack your whole squad out with double game weekers. I don't know if you'll have 15, but maybe you'll have 13 or 14. And then you're just going to have to live with this heavier bench for a little while. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'll go with 15 double game weekers. I think I'll have some City players in there maybe. I think the double game week 26 has actually kind of worked out in my favour, just because of the fact, as you mentioned, that I won't have to carry this heavy bench, you know, for a long period of time. And, you know, it might, you know, between game week 19 and, you know, 26, it might actually be beneficial to me in terms of, you know, any cancellations, etc. Because I think if there are going to be any cancellations, it's going to be in the next few months. And so, yeah, I think it's a good time to have that bench. And then I'll reassess. I mean, I think this is going to be a case of reassessing when I get to the second wild card and just see what the landscape is like. But yeah, for now, that's what I'm thinking my strategy is.
Yeah, I'm quite similar. I think if you have your wild card, like when to play your chip, pretty trivial. I think this is probably the most complicated wild card I've ever had to do in FPL, because usually when you're wild carding into a bench boost for a double game week, it's in game week like 34, 35, and you just kind of forget about the weeks afterwards because you've only got 2 or 3 weeks and you can make some very short term moves. in those weeks to cover off like having the heavy bench, and so you can pretty much just optimize for the double game week. Mm-hmm. This one, you're going into a stretch of at least 6 game weeks, depending on what you do with game week 26. Got to kind of plan it backwards from your game week 20 to 25 team. I think it's optimal to have 15 double game weekers. I was having a look at my model, and highest single game week player in game week 19 is Kevin De Bruyne. But he's the predicted 43rd highest scorer in that game week behind a whole bunch of like 4.5 million defenders. And I think having two games is really a huge advantage to a player. Just to kind of, as a rule of thumb, if Kevin De Bruyne takes, last year he got like 7.5 points a game roughly. So any player that's over 3.5 points per game as a player, is likely to outscore him in a double. There's a lot of players that fit into that category. There will, of course, be some single game week players which outperform like good double game week assets, just because there's a lot of variance in the actual week. But in expectation, you think you've got to go for the doublers. And that means that to plan the kind of glide path out of game week 19 becomes really tricky. So I think I'm going to end up with the likes of Mane, purely so that he can become Kevin De Bruyne in game week 20, and kind of not go for something which, like the model is saying, is slightly more optimal for the doubles of like the double Liverpool defence. And so it's a really interesting wild card to think about in and of itself, even though the chip strategy itself is quite simple.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. Like there's the before and the after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also the during, you know, like, so yeah, there's maybe some subtleties. Sounds like, Simon, you're going to do what I would try and do, which is like try and do some cute stuff. That means you can have Manny in the double and then you move him to Kevin De Bruyne and like that's no problem. But maybe Abdul, you're going to be a bit more pragmatic by the sounds of it. And like maybe if there's some guys that you like as long-term picks or guys that you've got value in, you might just keep them for your squad in the double game week and just settle for not having 15 double game weekers.
Yeah, and definitely, and I think it's quite interesting actually, Simon, that you're going for that tactic, because the way I was seeing it was, yeah, just the kind of before and after. You know, he's got Brighton at home in game week 18, and then 20, 21 and 22 he's got West Brom, Sheffield United and Burnley. And I just, what I was thinking was, I don't want to spend a transfer and get in KDB and after the double, whereas you're planning on actually on doing that. So yeah, I mean, I'm not, it's definitely something, I'm not saying it's the wrong strategy, but the way I seen it was, I didn't really consider that, to be honest. I didn't consider going for the 15 double game weekers and then looking to get KDB in after. And I think that's going to be, I mean, good luck to you. I think it's going to be quite tough.
I think I'll probably try and roll a transfer in game week 19. I think that unlocks things quite a lot. And I think if I can kind of think around price points, I'm going to have Mane standing in for KDB, Pulisic standing in for Grealish. Mm-hmm. So you can do both of those moves in one transfer. And I think other than that, I tried to work out what my ideal team would be for 20 to 25. And I think 8 of them have doubles. So then I'll be almost at the ideal team without hits, I think.
Okay.
Which could be a big advantage. And yeah, so I'll have him for Brighton on the free hit, and then KDB will be coming straight in for game week 20 for the three fixtures you mentioned. Although, given that I still have Chris Wood in my team, it kind of, the reason I mention it is because I've been planning to transfer him out for about 9 weeks, and FPL has a way of like throwing things in the way of the best laid plans. So it could all go horribly wrong. So yeah, Jamie, I know you don't have the wild card in hand. So like, how are you planning to navigate the upcoming doubles, and what's your strategy there?
Yeah, so I'm glad there's someone on the pod who can represent all the noobs that didn't manage to save their wild card, which is most people, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But it certainly was something that I'd hoped to still have. But again, the way that the chips have fallen, I'm on a really niche, weirdo strategy for the blanks and doubles coming up. When the fixtures,
it's very unlike you.
yeah, it's almost like it's to because of me. But yeah, when the fixtures were announced, it was like 20 minutes before the game week 13 deadline, was it? I'd already made my transfer for the week, just like about 10 minutes before that. So I wasn't able to kind of take that into account in terms of planning for these blanks and doubles. But the way that it's set up, if you don't have a wild card, is 5 teams are blanking in 18, and those same 5 matches are blanked, so 10 teams. And those same 10 teams necessarily double in the next week. So it's really hard to navigate well without a free hit chip. And if you don't have a wild card, it means you've got to build for either the blank game week in 18 or the double game week in 19 with free transfers. And what I imagined I'd be doing for all the game weeks since I used my wild card was building towards this double game week. Maybe there's just like more players to aim at in a double, because you can have the single game week players if they're good, and you can have the double game week players, you know, and you're still sort of golden and it's fine and you can just keep moving. But I ended up having, I think, 7 to 8, depending, like one person was kind of uncertain starts, but 7 to 8 players who actually had a game in the blank game week 18, and really only 5 good players that had a game in 19. And I had 5 free transfers between the announcement and game week 19 starting, once you allow for the fact that you're going to free hit in one of those weeks. So the most I could get to is like 10 players for 10 double game weekers for game week 19. And then, you know, if you're going to use your bench boost, then it's, you know, then you're spending those transfers on bench players, unless they happen to, you know, rather than like the premium guys and the guys that could make a really big difference. So I didn't like it, but the natural strategy for me was actually to build with free transfers for the blank in game week 18, because I could easily have 11 or 12 players for that game week and then free hit in 19. And then kind of like continue on afterwards. So I did some due diligence just to check like what it looked like, if it was really as bad as it kind of felt. And Man City have a game in 18, and they've actually got really good fixtures before 18 and after, from 20 onwards. And obviously there's like really good assets there. I'm really high on City as a team, and some of their assets for FPL. You know, I think there's people that are disappointed with them not being who they were in previous years, but you know, they're better in defense this year than they have been, you know, probably since the run-in when they last won the league, when they went really good in defense for that stretch, amazing stretch that they put in the back half of that season. And they're not as good as an attack, and that's been like a conscious tactical choice and things that they've traded off. But De Bruyne, for my money, is still like putting up really good stats, but he's more integral now, so he gets a bigger part of the attacking shares, and he's just underperforming his XG. He's still putting up really good numbers. Having him and a defender or two seems like a really good thing. You get to have the Spurs guys, and they've got really good fixtures starting in 16. So you get like, you can have a defender and maybe Sanand or Kane, depending on how you're fixed. And then you get to ride that good fixture run and then, you know, have them play their game in the blank game week in 18. And also the reason why I was so well set up for 18 was that I had 3 Villa players still from that wild card and 2 City guys. And Villa have 2 extra double game weeks to play at some point. They've got the Newcastle game and they've got the City game. Man City have their extra double game week game to play, which is, you know, these are the postponed game week 1 fixtures or the COVID postponement. So holding those guys longer term is actually nice, because they've got more fixtures than other players to come in the season. You know, I'm hoping they get those fixtures before I would next wild card, which is looking maybe a bit less likely now. But in general, I'm happy to hold those guys because I might land on a double that I happen to be really well prepared for. So after I got over the sort of disappointment of not being able to build my squad for the double game week in 19, that's my strategy. I'm gonna build for 18 and use my free hit in 19. And then I'm going to have more chips than other people as well, which are going to be hard to use, but I don't have a choice. Like, that's just the way it goes. You know, we were saying earlier, I don't think having a bigger bench is as big an impediment this year as it has been in previous years. So that's going to be okay, I think, for me with regards to bench boost. I could try and do it in 26. I could try and build for 26 a little bit, maybe, with free transfers. And if I'm canny about like the probabilities of teams getting doubles in there because of their cup runs, if that becomes possible, and then maybe wild card in between 26 and 29, when we have the similar situation to 18, 19 of teams that double and teams that blank, and they're the same teams, it's just fixtures get moved from one game week into the other. So that's my strategy. And then like, for completeness sake, there's obviously people without a wild card. if you're already well set for game week 19, better set than I was, by all means, build for that with free transfers. By all means, use your bench boost if you find a nice way of getting to that as well. I'd encourage like people to still pursue that as a strategy if they can. But, you know, like I was reminding people on Twitter the other day, your bench boost gets your four worst players off the bench. Just because it's a double game week doesn't mean you should use your bench boost. But if you can turn those players into players that have two fixtures, then it's a really good idea. Appearance points are free. You know, you can buy them at the minimum price for a player and you get 2 points. And like two points with certainty or near certainty is a lot of points in FPL, because that's like half a goal for a striker, and only really good strikers average half a goal a game. So I really like using bench boost and double game mix if you can, and padding out your squad with those guys if you can.
I remember you saying the four worst players thing, and it comes back to what I said earlier, like Kevin De Bruyne could be in your four worst players if you've got 11 other double game weekers.
Yep.
And so there could be a single game weaker in your four worst players, but they're a very high quality single game weaker that's coming off on your bench boost trip. So you don't even need to have 15 double game weekers to play the bench boost and to make it worthwhile.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that applies more to guys with a wild card, because if you don't have one, then you're still talking about using your free transfers to upgrade your bench to guys with double game weeks, you know, in order to make the bench boost viable.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but you know, you're totally right. And that's kind of like, that's what you'll be doing, Abdul, basically, isn't it? You'll have guys like that that you want to keep, or maybe you have value in, and effectively they might be people who would otherwise have been relegated to your bench that week that you're just getting on the pitch with your bench boost.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, what? And just hearing you talk about that, I'm really glad I kept my wild card, because that's gonna be some planning.
I mean, I like that, because I've got 5 weeks now where I have I've got really narrow options. I've just got to buy from certain teams, and there's certain guys I need to sell, and there's certain teams I need to buy from. So it actually simplifies things a lot, and I'm a mm-hmm. big fan of having some constraints. You know, I was thinking about that when you were talking about your price points. It gives you some constraints, and sometimes that can be quite nice for just like narrowing down your options and allowing you to like simplify your choices, yeah. Basically. So yeah, I'm definitely going to give serious thought to that. But yeah, it's a minefield if you've used your wild card already. It is worse. It is an advantage to the guys. I mean, people that have used their wild card already, we can just be grateful that we got the fixture announcements in so much advance. You know, we can actually build mm-hmm. towards them to some extent. That was a shame for the people who'd saved their wild card, because they could have had an even bigger advantage there if the fixtures got dumped on us right after game week 15, which is what I would have been hoping would have happened if I still had my wild card. But, you know,
I was hoping for that, yeah.
So, you know, it is like, even after getting a bit lucky, it's still rough, and it's still going to be quite difficult to squeeze in the bench boost. Like, the other chips become hard as well, you know. I'm optimistic enough about it.
Did you give any thought to playing your second wild card in game week 17 to attack these blanks and the doubles? Because that's obviously the other option. You still have a wild card available, even if you've used your first wild card to attack these doubles. Obviously you pay the price kind of further down the line, but it would obviously allow you to get the bench boost kind of spot on, and probably even more optimal than the game week 16 wildcarders. Was that something you considered? And Abdul, I'm not sure what you would do if you were in a position where you'd use your wildcard.
Yeah, it's not really something I considered too much, because... But kind of because of the stuff I was talking about, you know, like there are actually some nice aspects of the strategy that I'm on, in terms of like being able to hold Aston Villa, Man City, and I will have Wilson probably by the time I reach game week 18. And those are all people that have this extra fixture coming. And then like people that do use the strategy to wild card, free hit, bench boost, it's not like it's all profit. You know, there's some, you guys need to decide how many Man City assets you're going to get or forego. You need to decide how many Spurs assets you're going to get or forego. And so for me, like those are kind of offsetting aspects. But in general, I like to save my wild card. I like to use it late. I've used it really late in the last two or three seasons when there wasn't an obvious chip strategy benefit to this. And now that we've got this news about the further fun and games with blanks and doubles that are coming up, and probably the likelihood of more postponed games coming. I would strongly advise people if they, well, I wouldn't be thinking about using my wildcard in Game Week 17 for this. And I think Ben Crellin, you know, who's, you should trust more than me on it, said something similar. I understand if people want to do it. Yeah, it wasn't something I seriously considered.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'd be going down the same route as you if I had to use my wildcard, just planning for these and then, because there's too much uncertainty coming up. So yeah, it's definitely good to have that second wild card for either a second set of blanks and doubles or any other postponements that might happen.
Yeah, I think this is the one we're going to get the most warning on. I think we should hear about the 26 double, I think, in game week 24. So you can essentially, you've got four transfers if you roll your transfer in 23 as well. But you're not going to have as much warning as you are with these ones. No. So, yeah, I think I'd agree with you guys.
What my hope is that I might be able to make some kind of probability-based moves. If I decide on this thing of like trying to build towards a bench boost in 26 and then wild card out of it for 29, I could kind of get players that look likely to blank in 29 because they're good and because they're proceeding in the FA Cup, like they're still in the Cup and maybe their odds of progressing are good. So you can make some kind of probability-based calls about who's likely to have a blank. I might kind of, that might be the kind of thing I kind of feel like I have to do in order to make it work.
Yeah, that makes sense. The second round of doubles and blanks is going to be really tricky, I think. I think it's something which I kind of realised basically from here until almost the end of the season, it's basically you're in double game week territory, either planning for them, executing on them. And we've kind of had our normal FPL part of the season. That's over for the first third. And then the next third, maybe 15 game weeks is all going to be around preparing for doubles or preparing, get out of the having prepared for doubles.
That's right. I think we're going off road, aren't we? It's like, it's going to be a bumpy ride, I think, from here on in, especially if there's more cancelled games and stuff. I think it's going to be truly wild for this, like this next run. And I think keeping your head and trying to keep balanced and keep level through all that might be something that, you know, could be a bit of a deal breaker. You know, I'm still hoping it's going to be a long season, long enough for me to get some ground and get a decent finish out of it. It could be really fun, I think, the final two thirds of the season or wherever we're at the moment.
Yeah, team chaos. And I think that's actually, we've accidentally done a nice segue into the mental health aspects of the game, because I think what's going to be difficult, given that we're entering this kind of period, is those form chasers, shall I put it, where see an outcome, think I have to have this player because they scored. And I think that kind of way of playing the game also leads you to get very attached to the things that actually happen on the football pitch. Like it almost seems weird. It's like, it's the part of FPL I care least about is whether my players get any points or not. And I think that's probably the only way to stay sane, because I think it's very easy to get like attached to the outcome. When there's a tweet that really stuck with me, is a friend of the pod, FPL Sigurd, like, put up, like, FPL is like a game of you buy 15 dice that each have like a different probability weighting on the number that they roll, except you don't know what the ranges are, and they change over time. And it kind of just clarifies, like, there's so much variance in FPL that you can think that your decision was good or bad based on just a dice roll, and indeed other people's, which is like, it's quite fun when you get a bit of flack for, well, Bruno Fernandes usually. I don't know, like, how do you guys kind of stay sane in the crazy world and high variance world that FPL kind of is?
What I've found is, honestly, over the years, like, just really, really kind of sticking to trying to have an optimal process where I know I'm the move I'm making is the right move. Looking at the numbers, looking at, you know, all the facts, and, you know, and avoiding gut calls and avoiding going to players who I think, oh, he's looking good, but his stats aren't good, but, you know, I think he's going to start scoring soon. Really avoiding that and just, you know, going for the optimal process, and then really trying not to care about the outcome, if you know what I mean, because, I mean, if you care about the outcome too much, then it's going to be a stressful game for you. So that's one thing I've really tried to do over the years, and I have done, and it's really helped, personally, it's really helped me in terms of the psychological and mental health aspect of the game. Just as an example, I got rid of Salah this week for Bruno Fernandes, and, you know, there was a lot of reasons behind that, and one of the reasons was because, you know, I believed he was going to be benched because You know, obviously the early team news, and I thought that I didn't have Bruno Fernandes, who was a, you know, a very, you know, it's gonna be highly captained in a great fixture. Sorry, Simon, by the way. I know that result was tough for you, but
yeah, I'm trying to pretend it didn't exist.
We're gonna bleep that out.
If we're talking about the mental health aspects of FPL, absolutely fine. Football, no, still recovering from that one.
Yeah, well, it's been tough, but yeah, I mean, you guys will be fine, don't worry, but yeah, so I went for it, and then obviously on the Saturday, Salah comes off the bench and then scores two goals and an assist. And I was saying this to Jamie earlier, that it was kind of the first time in a long time where it's really annoyed me. But I knew in my head the process was right, because I'd kind of factored everything in. I knew that I didn't have any transfer I was going to make. My team was perfectly fine for game week 15, barring any injuries, but I was prepared to take that risk, and I thought, you know, it was a good move, and I went for it. And obviously Saturday, it seemed like, you know, disaster, but then I actually ended up being 13 points up on it. I think when things like that happen, you just really have to kind of think about the process and think, okay, you made the right decision. And if, as long as you think it was the right decision, then try and block out the outcome if it's a negative one. I think that's where people struggle, and it's probably where I kind of struggled mentally, you know, when I first started playing. But you know, since I've kind of had this approach, it's definitely helped my game mentally.
Mm, that's really good, and that's what I tried to do as well. Like, if we believe that this is a game that responds to skill, then the bit that we're in control of is the bit between game week, you know, when we're making decisions and we're deciding who to transfer and when, and who to captain and who to bench and whatnot. That's the bit that we have control over. And then when you go over that precipice and the game week deadline passes, you're just like absolutely helpless, you know. And so it really makes you vulnerable if you put yourself in a situation where your mood can be affected a lot by that part that you've got no control over. So I'm always trying to move the emphasis in the way I'm thinking about it to the process, and like trying to learn lessons and trying to think about how you improve. But I guess some weeks it's just harder than others. And I think, Simon, you'll probably agree here in saying that even though I try to play the game like a really sort of objective, quasi-scientific way, I'm still human. For some reason this week, that was just, I think it was actually things in like personal life, real life, that were getting to me. And I just, as the scores are rolling in, like one thing that I don't do ever is make decisions based on how I'm going to consume the information of the points coming in. Like, some people don't like relying on defenders because you're waiting on a clean sheet getting broken. But I don't care about that, because I might as well just be sleeping through the games and then looking at my phone the next day, and I'm just trying to base it on expected points. So I don't care if a team is playing first or last or when my captain is or anything like that. But I have been really, like, found it really impossible to avoid following the scores quite rapidly as they come in. And I think that's something I'd maybe like to tune out a little bit, because that is when I get frustrated. Like, it's hard to feel good even when things actually go well, I've noticed, because there's just so, it can seem like things are going badly so much easier, or you're waiting for things to go well. I think that's something I've been coping with less well than I maybe thought, you know, maybe gave myself credit for doing in the past. So yeah, like this week, for example, I just had this minute when I was just like, actually, why am I doing this? Because it's really affecting my mood. It's annoying me. And, you know, I sent out that tweet and got loads of really good responses. It was really nice to hear a lot of what people were saying. But I think it's just worth talking about that everyone, even perhaps people like that try and play the game in this like more objective way, like I'm not trying to make punts that are, you know, that I'm putting that are for the team I support or something like that. I don't even support anyone in England. I've got no attachment to like any team, but I'm still like, it does still affect me emotionally. And I suppose it's like a factor about how much we invest into it. And, you know, and maybe if we didn't care at all, it would make you question why you were doing it. So, you know, maybe it's good that we care a bit. Yeah, no, it's good to hear you, what you're saying, Abdul. I agree with you about that kind of emphasis on the process.
Even though you play that way, it's still hard not to get affected because you spend so much time on it. Obviously, all of us sitting here and all the guys in the Twitter community, I mean, we're clearly addicted to the game. So, I mean, to not get affected by it is extremely difficult.
Yeah, and I think it kind of, there's a bit of the rough with the smooth. I think you kind of have to care a bit to get the highs as well. I think it's a question of I think it's very easy to have your, when you get this addicted to the game, and obviously we're kind of like the interminable nerds who like spend far too much of our lives on FPL, and probably the people that listen to this as well are similar. It's very, no
offense. We need to insult the listeners.
Yeah. Well, if you made it this far, you're not going to switch off now. And it's very easy to have part of your identity tied up with how good of an FPL player you are, even in like a minor way, and therefore like when you do well or you do badly at FPL, it kind of gives you like a, if you're judging it by the results, you'll go on wild swings about how you feel about yourself in relation to FPL, and being able to kind of separate that out and be able to detach, I think is crucial to staying sane. I've been quite lucky in the last two FPL years, which I think makes it easier. And I think I've been a bit unlucky this year, just going by FPL review numbers. It keeps me humble to know that I was lucky, and it keeps me kind of sane to know that I'm being unlucky now. But I know that I'm probably going to be playing FPL for enough years that I'm going to both be very lucky and very unlucky over the time that I'm playing FPL, and that's pretty much inevitable.
Yeah, but that's a good thing. That, you know, that tool is good. It does help. And I think, you know, people maybe like hide behind it a little bit. And, you know, I don't know. I think there's probably some skepticism from people about, like, I suppose it comes down to how much you trust the model. Like, maybe some people believe that they can outplay the model because of things they're seeing that the model isn't and whatnot. But as far as it goes, I think it's a really excellent benchmark for how much luck you've had or suffered from not having. And that's something that I do use regularly as well, just to kind of check in on the quality of my play objectively rather than like how it feels like I'm playing. Do you use that, Abdul? Do you use the FPL review, season review tool, where you kind of, you can see like, you know, how many points you've accrued based on like the massive data model pre-match expectations or the odds model expectations or anything like that?
Yeah, I use that FPLreview.com quite regularly. Not just for that, but other things as well, like the implied odds, etc. But
yeah,
the season review, I mean, it's not something I check every week, but maybe like every 10 game weeks or something, just to see where I'm at. Same as you guys, it's a good tool just to kind of, you know, either bring yourself back into earth or, you know, just to kind of realize, just to kind of have a little gauge on how you're actually playing. So yeah, it's a great tool. And I'd recommend anybody actually that hasn't used it yet to have a look at it.
You're here.
Agreed.
I think a good topic just to kind of finish on is just on the mental health stuff. It's just the kind of, I know it's easier said than done, but, you know, try not to let it, you know, affect you if it is affecting you. Because, I mean, the times we're living in at the moment as well, just with all the kind of, you know, we're in lockdown and all the COVID stuff. As Jamie was saying, you know, FPL could be like a self-inflicted pain that, you know, we're kind of putting on ourselves when we've got other stuff going on in life and that. But try and see it as an escape rather than a burden. And just, you know, enjoy the game rather than kind of suffer from it. So, yeah, again, as I said, it's easier said than done. I think at the end of the day, I mean, we play FPL because it's fun and we enjoy it, and that's what it should be.
I agree with that. And I think on top of that, like, try to be kind to each other. Like, if somebody's had a bad week, like, don't be a dick about it.
Definitely. you're spot on, because, I mean, yeah, that you know, that kind of stuff does happen a lot. And, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all humans first, before we're FPL manager or before we're anything. So, yeah, totally spot on, Simon.
One thing that we're kind of talking around is that is Twitter kind of makes FPL better and FPL worse, I think, you know, especially from the mental health side. So there's that kind of lethal, heady concoction of being like somewhat addicted to FPL and somewhat addicted to Twitter, and then like seeing all these people posting their scores from the week when you've had a really bad week and stuff. So yeah, I think the stuff we were talking about earlier about fading the noise and like choosing what you look at and being in control of that, but also not being
addicted.
That's good advice.
Sound advice to finish on.
Yeah, I think that's a great note to leave it on. Abdul, yes, thank you so much for coming on. I've had a lot of fun recording. I've definitely learned a lot. Probably I'm a better FPL player than I was a couple of hours ago. So yeah, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
No, thanks for inviting me on, guys. Really enjoyed it. It's flown in, and I've learned quite a bit from you guys as well, actually. And I've actually realised a few things, you know, while I was speaking to you guys, which I spoke to Jamie about in the break. So yeah, no, it's been good. It's been productive.
Our pleasure. Thanks a lot. I'm sure the listeners are going to really appreciate you being so candid with your process and what makes you such an FPL genius.
That's too kind, man.
Jimmy, any other thoughts?
Nah, that's it. Just don't be a dick to people on Twitter.
Yeah, I'll try and remember my own mantra as well. That's the pod, guys. Listeners, take care. Give us a review, all the usual podcast stuff. Bye from me.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, guys. Bye.
Bye.